This is WABF, and it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review Talk Show, brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne and in Malbus with a state-of-the-art car wash. The Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review is hosted by Dr. Lou Campomenosi, president of the Common Sense Campaign. Good morning, Dr. Lou.
Good morning, Lori. I hope you and everyone here had a great 4th of July. And I think that, you know, what I found was interesting that I was watching the 4th of July celebration out of Washington, D.C., and I couldn't help but think that they're playing all the classical patriotic songs, they're doing all of this, and yet these people hate this country. And so my thought was, this is just a propaganda piece to make everyone think, see, Uncle Joe Biden's okay, he's really one of us, everything's back to normal, Trump's gone, blah, blah, blah. I think that by doing what they did last night, they just left themselves open to the hypocrisy factor that's there. You can't say the things that they have said, whether it's, you know, the left-wing squad or whoever. And there's a lot of them out there. And that leads me to another one of these things. So this morning, you know, Fox News, we tape that in the morning and watch it so we can catch it. And here you have these people from Congress basically saying, well, 1776 doesn't mean anything about freedom. You know, there's no freedom for the blacks. And, you know, I've said this before, and I think it's important to recognize two things here. Number one, the 1619 Project attempted to try to muddle, not even muddle. I mean, they deliberately set out to lie about why the revolution took place. And so the question about freedom not being there in 1776 really depends upon how you're going to describe what freedom is. And the fact of the matter is that slaves were freed between 1776 and 1783 as a result of the Declaration of Independence and, as I've mentioned on the show before, the fact that you had an anti-slavery movement that began with the Quakers in 1688. Now, how is it that I know this and these smart people from the New York friggin' Times don't get it? I'm sorry. This is the kind of SHI you know what that doesn't wash anymore. The second part of it is that if you look at the trajectory of freedom associated with the founding documents, we hold these, you know, truths to be self-evident, all men are created equal, blah, 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 blah. Okay. What happens with that? I mean, you're talking about a women's rights movement that really began in 1848. You're talking about an abolitionist movement that took root in the United States in 1688 and grew to the point where the abolitionists were a major factor in bringing about the Civil War, which was in part to free the slaves. I mean, that's what Lincoln was elected as a Republican to do something about slavery. So the trajectory of living up to the documents, the freedom documents, I think was there. Now, the complication is that how freedom came about once the Emancipation Proclamation was signed into effect in January of 1863, well, that took the end of the Confederacy to make that happen. And then you had, I'd say, at least 10 full years of absolute turmoil in the South where people were starving. The destruction was unbelievable. And so the whole question about what to do with the freed slaves was never really addressed in a way that could have perhaps led to some sort of healing at that time. And Reconstruction didn't do anything towards that end. So my point here, though, is that within 100 years, though, you started to see major changes in terms of attitudes. And that those changes were brought about in large part by NAACP court cases. In 1935, the Gaines case was essentially an attack on segregated schools. And the Gaines case was won by the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. It was the first time that segregation, based on Plessy versus Ferguson from 1898, was challenged, and there was a court case that took us down the road of not having segregation. Now, it took another 19 years until the Brown case of 1954, and then you started to see a movement towards ending segregation. At the same time that's happening, the attitudes had changed too within the country. World War II was an incredible victory for the United States over its enemies. Understood, okay? But at the same time, we were fighting an ideological war against Nazi racism. And so people held that mirror up to themselves and said, well, you know, this is what Hitler believes, and look at what we're doing to our own blacks here in our country. That sort of thinking did have an effect, I would argue. And as that argument was made, you had, at the presidential level, with Truman desegregating the armed forces. During the war, portions of it were. But after the war, for sure, you had the Fair Employment Act of 1942, I think it was, which made sure that minorities, blacks especially, were going to get employment in the war industry. You had blacks who served in the army in leadership positions. You had the Tuskegee Airmen. Suddenly, you had a group of black leaders who had been overseas, who saw things, who understood how to organize and how to make things happen. And it seems to me that World War II experience was a catalyst for fundamental change in terms of what black Americans were willing to accept as far as the status quo back home. And they came back and they wanted to change, see things change, and they worked towards that end. And then you had 1955, Montgomery, the bus boycott. First real attempt at social change that was driven by black outrage. And I think the lessons there were very clear, that if blacks got together, they could change things. The interesting fact is that it wasn't just blacks. There were white liberals who were involved in the Montgomery bus boycott. And thank goodness they were there, because they helped a great deal in providing transportation for blacks who were boycotting the bus. So my sense here is that the contemporary argument that white privilege and white supremacy were part and parcel of this, and I basically made this point in my message to Common Sense Campaign for 4th of July. White privilege and white supremacy only go so far in terms of trying to explain what happened, okay, over our history. If white privilege was so critical to whites, why did they help bring about the Civil Rights Revolution, and why did the Republicans essentially override the Democrats in passing the Civil Rights legislation of 64 and 65? It wasn't in white interest, if you believe in white supremacy. Why would the whites be doing that? Why would so many whites vote for Obama twice to get him elected? If white supremacy was the whole issue that whites had to be concerned about. So the short answer to this is that no, the case against white supremacy and white privilege lies in exactly what took place historically. Whites were an intimate part of the success that Dr. King brought about. King engineered it philosophically, and in terms of what he did, there's no question about that. But he didn't do that alone. And in the Birmingham letter, he called for, you know, the white pastors not to delay justice for the black people. And those pastors and those white people agreed with that. It became a moral issue. There had to be justice within the system. And I think that, you know, to close your eyes to that, as the BLM and Antifa people do, that's all, it's just communist propaganda. Unfortunately, with critical race theory, and we've talked about this, and I'm not going to spend any more time on it today, but I do think that, you know, the defense of 4th of July and the freedoms that we have to be made. And personally, I'm not going to take a back seat to anyone who's going to say, you know, we're the guilty ones. We need to go through a re-education process because we're racist. That's just wrong. Okay, and to classify all whites as racist, as CRT does, is a racist approach to fixing a problem which, in my view, does not exist at the level that these people keep saying it is. I mean, I saw on TV this morning, some black guy he's in the New York State legislature, saying freedom doesn't exist for blacks. Really? You know where it doesn't exist for blacks? It's in Africa, you know? That's where it doesn't exist. And so I would argue that, you know, these kinds of propaganda pieces that come out have got to be taken with a grain of salt, obviously, but they cannot be validated by us just sitting back and saying, oh, gosh, you know, maybe they're right. There is, you know, blah, blah, blah. No, it's not that way at all. And the social and political revolutions that I've talked about before on this show certainly validate the argument that the Declaration of Independence and its open-ended language allowed for the types of society, you know, the changes to society that were, you know, affected by Dr. King. So I'm not going to back down from this. And you know, it's one of these things about critical race theory that George Williams and I went to, you know, Baldwin County Board of Education. We spoke against it, and I defended it, you know, our position along the lines that I just said here. It's absurd to think that there is no freedom for blacks in this country. It's a propaganda point. The Marxists have always wanted to do this. And the argument that has happened here is that CRT basically takes the Marxist argument that basically says, you know, the capitalists oppress the workers, and now it's the whites oppress the blacks. That's all this is. And so I think we have to be, you know, very wary of all this, because these people are woke and they want to make these kinds of changes. And I think that, you know, it's our duty at this point to say no to that, which kind of gives me a segue into my next point, is that we are fighting CRT here, okay? And as I just mentioned, George Williams and I went to the Board of Education here. But beyond the individual effort that we've made, we have broadened this effort to where we have a coalition now of the Alabama Conservative Coalition and listen to this, the AFRW, Alabama Federation of Republican Women, is joining with us, so that what we are going to do is put together teams, biracial teams, to go throughout the state of Alabama and go to these local school boards. I've got a meeting Wednesday to start planning what we're going to do in Mobile. I've got people who are already agreed to go to Lee County, Calhoun County, and Jefferson and Shelby. Okay? So we're already in the process of doing that, in part because of the June 26th meeting we had in Birmingham. And I do think that what will come of this is then a very real opposition to CRT that you're seeing throughout the country, and it's going to be seen here too. Interestingly, the State Board of Education at their last meeting discussed resolutions about banning critical race theory. Now, unfortunately, I had asked the board to bring this up back in May, and they didn't, for reasons which I find to be absurd, but they didn't. They got bollocksed up in discussions about contracts, okay? So May was a dead month, but that had we done it in May, then we could have had resolutions in June that we could have, you know, signed on to in July. So now what's going to happen, my feeling is that this next meeting, they will go ahead and have some sort of a resolution adopted, but they won't be able to sign it then, obviously. So they'll either have to call a special meeting, which would take 6 votes to do that, or they have to wait till August. I think it's August 12th is the next meeting. So you have this issue where they could very well have taken care of this before school starts. I'm hoping that they will if they have enough of their members who want to bring about a ban.
Are there groups attempting to have critical race theory taught? Are textbooks changed?
Yes, yes.
More attempts at changing history?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what you have here is the Southern Poverty Law Center calling us basically, you know, racist. This is a conservative reaction to progress, and, you know, they have to stop it. But the real problem we're having already is that board members have been getting calls from their constituents that their kids are coming home with this critical race theory, and they don't want it. They don't want their kids to be taught this. I mean, how in the world are you going to justify saying to a little six-year-old, because you're white, you're bad, you're an oppressor, and these little black children over here are being oppressed by you? It doesn't matter if you're friends with these kids. They're being taught that you're the oppressor.
Children don't see the color,
no,
don't see the
exactly.
difference.
Exactly. I mean, you know, they just want to play and enjoy and blah, blah, blah. So I don't know. So I think that by next show, we should have an idea of what the lay of the land looks like, and I'll be able to develop this more fully. But clearly, July is the month that the ACC and the AFRW in tandem will be trying to go to these various school boards and say no to this, and we'll give them a resolution that they can, in fact, employ. All right? So that's what I wanted to talk about as a lead-in here.
Let me just say you're listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomenosi, who is an adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College, in addition to president of the Common Sense Campaign, and this is WABF.
Yes, thank you, Lori. I have to remind everybody who's that raving maniac on there saying all these bad words, getting Lori in trouble. Oh, Lord, look out. Okay, so let's take a quick look at one foreign policy point before I get into some more domestic things. Now, Lori, look at the clock. It's now 23 after. Do I have a few extra minutes today since it's a holiday?
You usually take 3 or 4 or 5
yes,
minutes
I know,
anyway.
Okay, we'll cross that bridge when we get
okay,
to it. We'll see what happens.
I am here on a holiday for you.
Yes, okay, that's right. Okay, so let's take a quick look at what's going on in Afghanistan. I've mentioned this to you before. I was opposed to what Trump was doing with Afghanistan, but let's put it this way. He made the point that any withdrawal was going to be conditions-based. Now, folks, that is fundamentally different than what Biden is doing. Biden has just given a due date, and we've already turned over Bagram Air Base to the Afghan government. And as you look at what's developing, increasingly it's clear the Taliban smell blood in the water, and they do not want to negotiate any kind of, you know, peaceful settlement. They want power, and they're going to try to get it. And so what's happening is that they are starting to show their muscle and their strength in some of these districts. Now, whether or not President Ghani from Afghanistan can find a way to resist this in a way that protects the freedoms that have been hard won remains to be seen. But this is where Biden is making the same mistake that he and Obama did in 2009, when they went ahead and, no, excuse me, 2011, when they withdrew all American troops from Iraq. Do you remember that? Do you remember what happened? ISIS was able to take charge, okay? They created their caliphate out of portions of the northern part of, northwest part of Iraq and Syria. I mean, this is what happened because Obama saw Iraq as the bad war and he wanted to get out. So he did. He pulls the plug. Then they had to put troops back in there because it was deteriorating. Then this is the problem that you're going to see, I would argue, down the road if Biden continues to move troops out before they've stabilized. You say, well, gee, Dr. Liu, we've been there 20 years. It doesn't matter. We've been in GD Korea since 1953. Okay? Yes, there's no fighting there. I got that, but it's a deterrent effect. The point here is that Afghanistan, if you look back at what Obama, that's a Freudian slip, Osama bin Obama, okay? What Osama bin Laden was able to do when 1994, when he went to Afghanistan, they funded all sorts of terrorist organizations, particularly in, you know, the Middle East. They had a safe haven to do this. Now, yes, bin Laden's gone, but ISIS is there. Al-Qaeda is still in effect. Do you think for a second that they're not going to use the breathing space that they will gain because the Taliban may be in charge? Do you think that we're going to lose valuable intelligence capabilities, you know, on the border of China and Iran and Russia? I mean, it doesn't make sense to do what Biden is doing. So just keep that in mind as you think about this, and perhaps Biden will change his mind and we'll see what happens with that. But I'm going to write him a letter and just lay this out from the perspective of what I just said. They made a mistake in 2011. It cost us dearly. The terrorists were able to come to the United States, for God's sake, you know, because Obama said, oh, ISIS is nothing more than the JV team. Wrong. Wrong, wrong. Damn wrong. Okay. I came close, Lori. I came close.
I'm watching.
I know. She's watching. She's got a thumb on that little button. There it is. All right. So let's talk about the southern border real quickly, okay? In May, 180,000. This is from ABC News, so I'm not manufacturing this, okay? Yes, they're fake news. I got that. But nevertheless, I'll use their 180,000 illegals that crossed over. Okay. Meanwhile, the Biden people are saying, oh, there's no crisis down there. The border is closed. We are secure. And then you see Fox News, because no one else is going to show this. Then you're going to see, you know, groups of 30, 40, 100 people crossing the Rio Grande River. Governor Abbott has declared an emergency down there. DeSantis and other governors are sending, you know, their own police forces to help Abbott, you know, shore up the Texas border. Abbott's going to build his own wall because Biden doesn't want to. And you say to yourself, well, why doesn't Biden do this? He should be doing that. No kidding. Yes, he should be. And they're breaking laws every day. But guess what, folks? And this is the big strategic, you know, reason that the Democrats are doing what they're doing. They want these illegals that are already here, take your pick, 12 to 22 million, they want them to be citizens. They want more brown folks coming across the border. So now they're on track to over a million in a short period of time. They want these people to vote. And you say to yourself, well, that's okay. They can do that. You know, that's okay. I mean, it's a democracy. That's not it, folks. It is illegal to do what they're doing. There's a process to gain citizenship. Congress has stumble-bumbled for the last 10 years trying to figure out what to do with it because the Democrats want all of these people to become citizens. It's that simple. That's their calculation. So What do we do then? How are we supposed to deal with this? Well, the first thing we have to do, and I will say this. This is from Trevor Loudon, who is a New Zealander, who is an expert in communist tactics and strategy. Actually, Common Sense Campaign had Trevor Loudon down here, I think maybe 2012, something along those lines. Super, super good guy. Well, he wrote an article in the Epoch Times, which I will get and post on the Common Sense Campaign website as soon as I get a chance to. But he wrote this article as a way for us to deal with the communist strategy of bringing a socialist revolution to this country. And so many of you think, oh my God, here he is again. It's Joe McCarthy, you know, communist under every bed. Well, let's put it this way, folks. Joe McCarthy was right about communist penetration in the government. Even Truman had to get rid of thousands of people in the State Department who had been let in to fight the war, and they were all communist sympathizers. Alger Hiss comes to mind. You know, Alger Hiss was Roosevelt's trusted advisor. So, if you want to call me a McCarthyite, go ahead. It's fine. Because guess what? BLM and Antifa are out there for you to see on your own, and they are Marxist-oriented. That's all this is. They want a socialist revolution. Isn't it interesting that one of the BLM leaders, they've gotten hundreds of millions of dollars from these stupid businesses that have bought into this BLM argument, okay? And you know, when you think about Black Lives Matter, why is it that Black Lives Matter so much that thousands of blacks were killed in, 6,000 have been shot in Chicago this year alone? 6,000. At least, well, they're on their way to another record in terms of killings. But here you have Black Lives Matter. They don't say anything. They don't care about that. What they want is propaganda, shots. And those propaganda shots were delivered to them in Minneapolis with George Floyd. It was delivered to them with Michael Brown in Ferguson. I hope you remember that. You know, hands up, don't shoot. That was another lie that they put out there. Hands up, don't shoot. Michael Brown was guilty as hell, because he had just robbed a store owner, come out there, tried to get the cop's gun, couldn't get it, ran away, and then charged the cop who shot him. You know, even Obama's attorney general's office found the cop not guilty. So, but it doesn't matter. I mean, it still doesn't matter. So they've used the George Floyd thing, and again, protests kick off. These protests went on and on. They're still going on. These are all under Democrat-controlled cities. Now, it's interesting, in my view, to see how they're trying to now say, well, it's the Republicans who wanted to defund the police. Oh, God, give me a break. You talk about Goebbels' big lie. Here it is. This is what they're trying to do. I mean, number one, they say the border is secure. Meanwhile, you're watching these people cross the river. You know, they say, you know, it's the Republicans who want to defund the police. And you've got all of these videos of these various left-wing councilmen in Minneapolis wanting to defund the police. Some judge just now said that the Minneapolis people, they've got to hire more cops. Now, this is the absurdity of what's going on. Now the judges, and who the hell elected the judges to make decisions like that? Okay, that's number one. But number two, it's interesting that these people who want to defund the police have the police protecting them. The hypocrisy factor is sky high here.
Like the no-gun people that have security with guns protecting
exactly.
them.
Exactly. There you go. Thank you, Laurie. You know? I mean, that's what we're dealing with here. So, I am now running up onto the clock here. I see where I am. Okay, so here's what I'm going to do. Lori's giving me 5 minutes. Okay, so let's do this. We know the problem that's out there. We know BLM and Antifa have got to be stopped. So Trevor Loudon has basically come up with a plan, okay? And the first part of his plan is that you have to face reality. The Democrats want power. It's that simple, okay? Trump was outmaneuvered by a combination of the globalists, rhinos, and the Democrats. Everyone knew what the Democrats were doing to make sure that mail-in ballots were going to be allowed. And again, we get back to the Jimmy Carter, you know, led committee back in 2005 that basically said mail-in ballots are a key way to undermine the integrity of any election. The Democrats must have read this. That's their playbook. And so you saw this time after time, state after state. And this is what Mo Brooks has been saying, okay? Arizona is now going through its audit. We'll see how this goes. But it's not just the audits. It's not the fraud. It's not the voters, the dead who are voting. It's the unconstitutional changes to the election laws that drove the nail in Trump's coffin. That has to be stopped. And that's one of the things, though, that Trevor Loudon says, okay? Election integrity, the second point, election integrity is critical. Okay, and I would argue that we're already seeing some of these states move in this direction. But one of the key points he makes is that we have got to get rid of these electronic voting machines. The whole issue about Dominion voting machines, I've talked about this to you all before. The fact is that when Texas said no to it in 2019, that should have been a clear signal to every other state that there were security issues with Dominion, that you could not trust it. And what does Kemp do in Georgia? He takes Dominion. He and Raffensperger. I mean, it's unbelievable. And they did it, and they still haven't gotten rid of it. So election integrity is critical. We are moving in the right direction down here, and I think that we'll continue to do that. Here's another point that Loudon makes. The GOP has got to have closed primaries. Now, do you remember a few years ago, we pushed hard on the Republican Party here because what was happening was that Democrats could vote in the primary. It's open. It's an open primary process. Bless you, Lori. Okay? Open primary process. All that does is it makes sure that no conservative candidate can ever get elected. So the GOP finally moved in this direction, and they finally passed a law that says if you vote in one primary, then you have to vote in that same primary if there's a runoff. Well, I mean, that's really a half-hearted attempt to do this. You should be a registered Republican or a registered Democrat. That's it. So I think that we will definitely push harder to make sure that loophole is taken care of, all right? Loudon also talks about forming a compact of free MAGA states, America First states, okay? And what this means is that we would make sure that these states are constitutionally protected from federal encroachment. Now, think for a second. You may have heard me talking about this during the session where we had asked the legislators to go ahead and pass, as Arizona did, restrictions on state officers enforcing any federal unconstitutional approach, particularly on guns. Now, we didn't get it passed as they did in Arizona, but Loudon is right about this. But you see, here, this is, it's Arizona, it's us down here in Alabama, it's DeSantis in Florida. It's a hodgepodge. And I've asked both Jerry Carl and Mo Brooks about that. Is there anything going on in Congress where the Republicans are putting together strategies together to make sure that we are checkmating whatever Biden is doing? And the answer is no. Loudon's argument is there better be some sort of a unified strategy here, because if you don't have it, it's going to be impossible to contain what's going on. And I think Loudon is right about that. Okay. Another point he makes is that we need to boycott big tech. I've mentioned this to you before. We need to get away from Facebook. Go to the alternatives. Okay. Force them to deal with losing revenue. Another part of that, though, is boycotting, meaning go buy your goods that don't say China made. Don't buy Coke. I've given up on Coke after what they did to Atlanta. Forget that. We can make those kinds of choices from an economic. So boycott and boycott, okay? Loudon gave us a nice outline of what we need to do. We are doing some of these things. The fact of the matter is, red state attorney generals have filed lawsuits, some of which have been supported in court, and that's helpful. But it's critical at this point that we use the full effect of the law, not a violent approach. None of this business of, you know, rabble-rousing, oh, we're going to take back this. No, we're not going to have a revolution on this, not a forceful revolution. We're going to use the law, and we're going to overcome. We shall overcome, because we are in the right.
A beautiful ending note.
Thank you very much, Lori.
Dr.
Listen, thank you all for being on this today, and we'll be back next week, and hopefully you'll have a wonderful week, free from rain, maybe, but... I hope everyone had a great 4th of July. Take care. God bless.
Thank you. You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campo-Minosi, president of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, including the Shell gas stations in Daphne and in Malbus, with the state-of-the-art car wash on Highway 181. WABF now resuming our regular programming. If you missed part of this program, or you'd like to tell a friend, you can listen later at WABF1480.com.